This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Matt Williams, the morning show host for WAFB Channel 9 for almost 8 years. He's been at Baton Rouge for 11 years, and we'll talk about what's happening in our community. Is there going to be a St. George as a city? We'll discuss it with Matt. Also, Governor Jindal making news at the National Governors Conference. One governor responded by calling our governor insane. Also on the show, the National Public Radio NPR News Executive Editor, Madalika Sika. Her book is A Breast Cancer Alphabet. We will talk with her about her experience with this, and it's a fascinating book from Madalika Sika. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. And we thank you for your contributions today and for your support of WRKF. In studio is Matt Williams. He's been at WAFB Channel 9 for almost 11 years and has been the morning show host for about 8 years. And he is a man who follows what's happening in our community, and there is much going on. And I would say that at any time, but especially at this time. Last year, the big story, number one for the year of 2013 by the Baton Rouge Advocate, was St. George. And it looks like that might be the big story of 2014. What's going on with St. George?
Morning, Jim. Well, I tell you what, it is absolutely shaping up to be the story. I think we all knew it was going to be. The voices are only going to get louder. They're only going to get a bit more pointed with the words, the back and forth. I certainly have my opinions. I try, obviously, not to show them on the show in stories like that. I'll leave the other folks to come on and give their opinions, and I'll kind of try to stay down the middle. I'm certainly leaning one way. I know what I want to have happen. I think we are better when we're working together. I absolutely believe that this city is making moves in the right direction, and I mean, just look at everything that wants to be a part of Baton Rouge right now. So, you know, for my own purposes, I'd hate to see us split up. I think it sets up generations of us versus them, and just I wouldn't look forward to that at all.
Well, the Baton Rouge Advocate, and it calls itself the Baton Rouge Advocate, the New Orleans Advocate, and maybe soon to be the St. George Advocate.
Yes, indeed.
Says an LSU official says the university is entertaining conversations about annexing parts of its campus into the city of Baton Rouge amid the looming possibility of the new city of St. George. So this is a story that has all kinds of tentacles, and we shall see where it goes.
Far-reaching.
But we'll be talking much about it, I have a feeling. And there is no deadline on getting the signatures.
You and I were talking about that the petitions that are out there, get the signatures. Oh, really? How much time do you have? There is no deadline. We have forever. So, you know, regardless of what happens this year, if it doesn't go the way some want, well, will we see it the next year and the next year and the next year? So who knows how long this conversation goes on.
Well, this is an election year for the entire state of Louisiana, and there's a focus in Baton Rouge, the homegrown, actually born in Chicago, but grew up in Baton Rouge, Bill Cassidy, congressman for the 6th District. He's running and looks like he's the favorite to make a runoff with Senator Mary Landrieu. That will be an interesting scenario.
It certainly will. We had him on the show not too long ago. We were talking, of course, about the flood insurance rate hikes and how do we delay what's there now and solve the problem so it doesn't happen again, and how do we solve it so the FEMA just can't come in and stamp down without really taking a look. But obviously, Cassidy and Landrieu makes for a very interesting runoff, especially with the way our election runs with the guerrilla primary. And seeing those two in a runoff, stories for weeks. It's going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, Landrieu has quite the war chest. Cassidy's built up one as well. It's all going to be played along the conservative line. So we'll see exactly how much distance Mary Landrieu can put between herself and the president, and how much of that distance that Cassidy can close and say, no, there is no difference between Mary Landrieu and President Obama. That's going to be the card that he will play.
Well, our governor, Bobby Jindal, pounced on the President of the United States a few days ago and has gotten much national attention. And today the Advocate says Bobby Jindal out of order. I think about 10 feet from the West Wing, Bobby Jindal tore into the President of the United States, and he caused some chagrin among his colleagues, particularly his Democratic colleagues. The governor of Connecticut even used the term insane to describe Governor Jindal's remarks. Here's how the governor sounded not so long ago.
On the State of the Union, the president talked about using his pen, and also he's said in subsequent speeches about using his phone to take executive actions and to bypass Congress. And certainly, I made a few suggestions today, and I've got additional suggestions on how he could do that if he were serious about growing the economy. The Keystone Pipeline certainly one. Increasing drilling and leasing activity on federal lands is another. There are things he can do on educational choice. The reality is the president's got a choice. And what I worry about, I heard a question over here about whether he mentioned the minimum wage. Yes, he did mention the minimum wage repeatedly to us. And what I worry about is that this president, the White House, seems to be waving the white flag of surrender after more than five years now under this administration. The Obama economy is now the minimum wage economy. I think we can do better than that. I think America can do better than that. And so I think there are things he can do through executive action. The Keystone Pipeline is just one example. I think there's several other things he can do.
All right. The governor's on a roll, as he often is. It's hard to break in when he starts talking. But he's attacking the president. But the Democratic Party immediately put out a press release after this verbal tirade by the governor, saying that he had voted for the minimum wage when he was in Congress and George Bush was the president of the United States. Sounds like he's had an epiphany.
Funny how all that works. What's funny is you hear from the other governors. It's the governor's convention up there, association all meeting up there. You hear from some of the other governors who are in the room, and to hear them, they're like, well, Bobby, this was... I thought we all had that kumbaya moment. I thought we were all kind of on the same page or at least reading from the same book. And then we step out to the podium where the mics are and you get sideways. What happened, Bobby? And so that was coming from the other governors in the room. That's not a media perspective. That's from, and not just the Democrats, even some of the Republicans were saying, yeah, that's not exactly what went on behind closed doors. The conversation was a bit more peaceful.
Well, the whole idea of the National Governors Conference is to elicit a bipartisan fervor.
And, right. That was the idea. Get that kumbaya thing going. And then all of a sudden.
But Bobby Jindal is having none of that.
Yeah.
But this governor of Connecticut, perhaps he'll challenge our governor to an arm wrestling competition.
We'll definitely run that one on the morning show.
Absolutely. I tell you what, your ratings would go
through the roof.
Through the roof.
Yes, indeed.
But Bobby Jindal is running for president. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I don't think so, not with the comments he's making.
And that's why he's doing things like this. And let's give him his due. It took some gumption to do this.
Oh, absolutely. You are, again, you could run the tape measure from the White House, the wing, to that podium. He is right there. He's on the steps. So there was a reason he did that there and in that location and at that moment. But no, he's absolutely, we've always understood this. Mm-hmm. The big line from him is, I have the job I want. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not going to be the case here for very much longer. We understand he's always had higher aspirations. Where that takes him, we'll see. But right now, he's running for a higher office.
Well, speaking of higher aspirations, John in New Roads wrote a few days ago that the governor appears to be wearing elevator shoes. He's a little taller than he was when he first took office, and you know, in your 40s, you generally don't start sprouting.
I had a growth spurt when I was 35. It happens.
Well, you're you're what six?
It doesn't
six
happen.
Foot,
6'3".
6'3".
I was 5'9" when I came to Baton Rouge, so I've really elevated.
So the governor is a man of stature, and he's taking on his colleagues.
Yep.
In Washington, D.C., right outside the White House where he wants to live.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about it. We've all understood it. But
you think he was measuring the drapes when he was in there the other day?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is what I want here. This is what I want there. Actually, you know what? Oval Office? No. We're going to put some actual corners in here. I don't know. Who the heck knows? But he's obviously had those aspirations for a while, and now truly be able to focus on them. It's going to be interesting.
Well, when I was a kid, everybody wanted to grow up and be governor. Now they want to grow up and be president. And
why? That is insane. Public service is one thing, but that is, oh, gosh.
But David Vitter says the governor's job is his last stop. And, you had a chance to talk with him recently.
We sure did. Yeah, he was on the show not too long ago. Again, he brought him on to – shortly after he announced, obviously threw his name into the hat, wanted to get him on talking about that, but he was also talking about trying to delay and fix the issue with the flood insurance rate hike. But him throwing his name into the hat, he immediately becomes one of the front runners, the front runner. I don't know.
Don't
we'll
think
see.
There's any
that name alone.
He's going to be going to be formidable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Jay Darden will be on this show.
Well, there's the other name.
A couple of days.
Yeah, there's the other name.
And he, actually, he'll be on tomorrow. So
there's the other. Yeah. Well, again, there's more folks running, obviously, but when you talk about name recognition, there's a couple of the big boys right there.
Well, and there are others. John Bell Edwards will be on next week.
You just got everybody.
Well,
are they lining
I
up
haven't
outside?
Gotten David Vitter, though. Now, I understand that he even brought up the Richard Sherman to you.
He did nothing of the sort.
There wasn't a Richard Sherman moment with Senator Vitter.
Yeah,
okay.
No. He was, you know, he came on to talk a little bit about running and obviously the flood insurance rate hike. So it was always a quick interview.
And we'll be back after this brief time. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Matt Williams, the morning show anchor at WAFB, the top-ranked morning show in the state of Louisiana, maybe in the United States. He's got some big Arbitron number, or big Nielsen numbers. I'm in
Arbitron.
Radio.
Look at you, radio
it's
guy.
It's like people come on and talk about your viewers. Actually, Arbitron's been bought by Nielsen, so in many ways, Nielsen is the entity that determines
Raises.
It's amazing what happens with those numbers, right?
It is. And what's
raisings,
funny,
advertising rates.
Oh, hey, look, I know what's important. I know what on what side the bread is buttered. But you know, it's funny for those Baton Rouge. This market is still a diaried market to some point. There are there is a company out there that kind of does metered markets, but we're still a diaried market for most cases, and so that means somebody's got to fill something out somewhere, and so that's. What's amazing is that's what we rely on. Somebody be like, oh, wait, I forgot to fill that out. I've had 2 weeks, but I'll check all this stuff here. It's amazing that this business runs on that kind of a diary. It's
you live and die by it.
Oh,
but for a long time, WAFB has been the market leader. And the morning show is, I think, the highest rated of all the programs.
That team that is there right now is incredible. And every morning I walk into that place, I understand how lucky I am. I got producers who were there before midnight showing up, banging out. Mm-hmm. This is a 2.5 hour show now, on at 4:30 to 7, and banging out stuff. And of course, the on-camera folks are just ridiculous. Every morning I realize how blessed I am to sit next to Lauren Westbrook. You've got Johnny Ashen over there who is... we call him the traffic guy, but if he were to go away, I guarantee you half the people would stop watching. He's amazing. Diane Deaton, she's the longevity in this. I don't know where she gets her energy from. She's incredible.
Maybe the same place you do.
Nah, it's fun. It's a great place.
What
to
time
work.
Did you get to work this morning?
This morning was a little. I usually get to work about 1:40 in the morning. This morning was a little bit earlier. I had to be out on location somewhere.
So you were there, what, at midnight?
No, I was not there at midnight. My producers were. No, I was there. I showed up a little after 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yay.
1
I'm asleep right now.
And Matt, at the end of the morning show, he just doesn't say, hey, I'm going home, take a
tapping
nap,
out.
I'm mow the grass, whatever. You put on your Crime Stoppers hat among many other hats.
Yeah, some days it is. And that's... That can be difficult. I tried to count not too long ago how many living rooms it was I've sat in, and I've heard these heartbreaking stories from moms and dads and brothers and sisters and families, and you know, a lot of times they just want somebody to talk to, and so that's what you do. You talk with them for a while. You get 15 minutes of interview, then you turn off the camera and you just continue to talk for another half an hour. That's just what they want. And I wish the Crime Stoppers program here is one of the most successful in the country. One of the most successful in the country. And it's because of the people who watch and pay attention and want to be a part of making this community better. They call in. They know it works. Actually, this past year, 2013, I ran in January a story on our fugitives. Every week we'll show a fugitive of the week. And at one point, we had captured 49 of 53. I think it was 49 of 53. During 2013 that we showed. So there were still 4 out there. Well, in January, I ran those 4 again. And wouldn't you know it, within a month, all 4 caught. perfect record for 2013.
53 out of 53.
Yeah, and one and 2 years prior to that, we were 61 out of 63. 61 out of 63. We did a couple more per week. And the only two we didn't get were really big long shots. They were cold cases. One was 25 years old, a 25-year-old case. They were still looking for them. They just threw it out there hoping maybe they'd get something. But that's the kind of success that Crime Stoppers has here. And it's not because of WAFB. We're happy to be partnered with them, thrilled to be partnered. It's because of the viewers and those who want to try and better their own community. So please, 344-STOP, keep calling in.
344-STOP. And unfortunately, there's a lot of crime to stop.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, we see it all the time. And for those who only pay attention fleetingly, you may think, it's the same place. I live over here. You know what? Nothing exists in a vacuum. We're all connected somehow, some way. This is our town, and this is our city. And so if it affects somebody up in Zion City, then you know what? Someone down mm-hmm. Country Club of Louisiana, South Louisiana, that should still be important to them. South Baton Rouge, that should still be important to them.
Well, here's a question about Edwin Washington Edwards, who at 86, soon yes. to be 87, is planning on running for Congress.
Is he? He didn't say he was. I think he said, I don't know what where they got that information, but I'll make up my mind when my mind's made up. Or
translated.
I'm running.
I'm running unless something unusual happens.
Yes.
But I think he wants to run. His wife wants him to run, and he will get a lot of votes.
He's absolutely going to get a lot of votes. I mean, is there a more right now in this state? Is there a more popular? Look, this is an 86-year-old, mm-hmm. a guy who served time. How much of his life? 10% in jail.
About 10% of his life's been behind bars. Yes,
the most popular
eight and a half years.
Most popular Democrat in the state right now.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Close.
I think the feelings about him are the most passionate.
I think you're right.
Pro and con.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt
But there is a con side to this that has to be factored in.
A con?
But
did you just say that?
I did. A little play on words there. Just for you.
Thank you.
But Edwin Washington Edwards is one who has been discounted before. I don't think in 1991 many people gave him a chance to win. And somehow, some way, he ended up in a runoff with David Duke, an incumbent governor. Buddy
yes.
Romer finishes
right.
third.
Yeah.
And Edwards smashed Duke by 22 percentage points. So it's not beyond him to win, but what an unusual scenario it would be, a guy who can't even vote for himself. What if he lost by one vote?
Exactly. Oh, God, the storylines are just dripping here. So, yeah, no, I think he's, you know, welcome to the sixth. That's going to be interesting.
The other day I was on the show with Gus Weil, and we were talking about whether anybody who was in Congress in 1965 when Edwards first arrived was still there. And Kirsten Alvanitakis from the Democratic Party office right across the street from you, she emailed, said John Dingell was there. And then I see he's retiring. He's been in Congress since 55. His father was John Dingell, who was there in 1933 to 55. So 80 years there's been a John Dingell in Congress. And now his wife, his 60-year-old wife, he's same age as Edward, actually I think a year older. He's 87. His wife is 60. She's going to run for the seat.
Stop. Really?
Yeah, so he's got a wife 27 years his junior. Edwin Edwards has a wife 51 years younger than he.
Yeah, shame about that reality show.
Speaking of Nielsen ratings.
Speaking of, yeah, exactly.
By the way, Piers Morgan, I hear he's gone at CNN.
Yeah.
He didn't ring the bell.
No, apparently not. And again, it's all about the viewership. If you don't get it, then why do we have you on? We'll move on to anything else, even if it's color bars that bring in a higher rating. So, look, nothing lasts forever. I know my seat certainly is not permanent, and if they don't like what they're seeing, then bye, Matt. We're gonna get in the next train, monkey. So it's ever shifting, this world we live in and work in.
Yeah, and you got to have the ratings to pay the bills, because of the ratings, you have a nice new facility at WAFB.
Oh, we really
now.
Do.
Yeah.
Have you? You were over there.
I was over there.
Did you
I was
count
over there.
The number of monitors? It is a Best Buy showroom over there.
Gotta have security to protect big shots like you.
We should work on that. We should work on security. That may be next budget. Next budget, we're going to work on security. No, it's incredible. You walk into that newsroom now, and you just kind of feel like, whoa, now this is
big time.
A newsroom. You got to lower the octave mm-hmm. a little bit here and get your best Tom Brokaw and Dan Rather going when you walk in there. Because yeah, they drew up something special, and it's an incredible work. environment.
And that kind of thing certainly affects morale.
It does. But, it does, yeah.
But for years, WAFB was modest in its surroundings, but now is a bit more opulent.
Hey, look, man, for years, I stared down at carpet that wasn't there but used to be, you know? And actually, at one point, oh, gosh, my news director is going to kill me. Sorry, Rob. At one point, they were talking about doing this way back in the day, and we're going to get some new walls in here. And this was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And instead of a new anything, they threw some paint on the walls. It was actually a fabric wall covering,
yeah,
which is bad to begin with, seriously. But then the idea was, well, let's just paint it. And so they painted it, and that was awesome. And that was the improvement. But no, this is the real deal. They went out of their way, and money well spent, and everybody loves this thing, and it's always been a good place to work, and now we actually have a great environment to work in.
Well, before coming here, Matt was named the Television Reporter of the Year in the great state of New Mexico, of enchantment.
It's like a half century
ago. In 2001.
Yeah, okay, close.
So how is it covering news here compared to a place like New Mexico?
Oddly enough, I won Reporter of the Year as a sports reporter. I was going up against news reporters, but I was a sports guy there. And I thought a few of my stories were strong enough because they were they weren't just sports stories. They were very personal stories that had to do with sports. And so I put them into the news category and ended up winning. It's just, I don't know, it's just different. I was really I was a sports guy. I was a sports director in New Mexico before I got this gig. But sports is a young man's game. Oh, my gosh. I don't know how Steve Snyder's done it. Man's only 35 years old.
Yeah, and we went to college together.
Come on.
Why am I 20 years old?
Come on. No, it truly is. Those guys burn the candle at both ends. All the sports guys here, there's so much to cover. So I got out of it just because it was, man, I was dying. But news here, man, you are never wanting for a story down in South Louisiana. It is fun being in the news business down here.
Well, I've said a few times that Louisiana has 1.4% of the national population. We generate far more than 1.4% of the national media headlines. And thanks to Bobby Jindal, we're keeping it up.
Yeah, we are. We really are.
We're keeping it up. So, Bobby Jindal, I think people, we talked about people underestimating Edwin Edwards. Mm-hmm. Those who say he has no shot of being the next president of the United States.
Do not underestimate that man. He was at the grand opening for the newsroom there at the fantastic WAFB flagship right there on Government Street. It was funny because I was talking to him for 10 minutes, just he and I for 10 minutes, and the Southern Band comes marching down our hallway. It was that kind of grand opening at WAFB. And the Southern Band comes marching down the hallway, and the guy in charge of the band is moving people out of the hallway. And he doesn't shove the governor, but he's like, you guys got to move. I'm like, this is the governor. But so the governor and I end up just by ourselves in one of these tiny little edit bays. And so it's he and I just in the edit bay, one of the edit bays at WAFB, as the Southern Marching Band goes marching by in our hallway, and we just continue the conversation.
And that's when you notice something unusual because he was looking you straight in the eye.
You're not going to... Okay, so maybe the shoes are a bit different on our man right now. And that's fine. I have gray hair that wasn't there 10 years ago. Look, I came to Baton Rouge, and I had hair color. Now, it's gray, and it's all falling out of my head. Well, actually, not yet, but it's changes happen.
You're a youthful 39, about to be 40.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah? You're okay with that?
No. They say it's just a number, but when it happens to you, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. I'll get through that day, I guess.
Well, last night, by the way, in a rain-shortened game, UL beat LSU 4-1.
Five innings, yes.
So, Paul Maneri, he takes all comers, plays all the state schools.
Yeah, yeah.
But the football team will not play Southern University.
Correct. And that, you know what? And I didn't, when I first got here, I didn't understand it. I get it now. I get why. It's going to be more divisive than it
would.
You
think?
I think so. Because what's going to happen in that ball game?
I don't know.
Southern baseball versus LSU baseball.
Right.
That, anything can happen there. Truly anything can happen there. But you've got hundreds of pounds of difference along your offensive line. I don't know how good it would be for the morale of a city if something bad were to happen. You know what I'm saying?
But LSU plays all these other state schools,
right,
including Northwestern,
right,
State, East State.
Out of Baton Rouge.
These are schools that are also outmanned.
Right.
I don't think many people would expect Southern to win.
No, right. I just think it's so close. They share a city. I don't know.
I think
I love seeing it everywhere else. I don't know.
And I really like the idea of them playing at Memorial Stadium.
Neutral, you can put that in Memorial Stadium?
A neutral site, charging, let's say, $500 a ticket.
Oh, my gosh.
And we would have quite a
spectacle. I will never forget my first Southern game that I went to. I was here for less than a year, and I went up. I left 10 pounds fatter. They fed me so well. I had no idea what I was walking into up on the bluff, and I left there.
And the music.
It was a religious experience. Trust me.
A spiritual experience.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Religious for some, spiritual for me. Well, it was something. It's always exciting up there.
Well, it's always exciting when Matt Williams is on the air, as he is every Monday through Friday at 4:30 in the morning. So we'll let you go home and take a nap and do what you got to do. And I'm sure you'll be back at work this afternoon and be back on the air tomorrow morning. But it's always a pleasure to visit with you.
Good to talk with
Matt
you,
Williams. Take care and keep up the good work. And congratulations on 8 years. And a big day coming on May the 12th.
No, sir. No, sir.
There you go.
All right.
We'll be back after this brief timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And our guest is Madalika Sika. She is the NPR News Executive Editor. And she has written a compelling book, A Breast Cancer Alphabet. And this comes as she has fought the battle. And in 2010... she was diagnosed with breast cancer after a routine mammogram. Good morning, Madalika.
Good morning, Jim.
You were diagnosed 4 years ago, and I'm sure this was a life-changing event for you.
Well, it definitely interrupted things.
Well, in a big way. But it, you know, if we live long enough, most of us will have cancer. But still, a diagnosis is something none of us really... would like, and I guess in our capacity to create our own reality, most of us hope and pray and think that we'll never have that reality, but some of us do.
That is true, and, you know, there is no history of breast cancer in my family or much cancer at all, and so of all the health things I thought I might have to deal with, cancer was never one of them.
So what did you do?
Had to think about it. You get the diagnosis. I was actually working at the time. I was at the White House. We had just finished an interview with the president, and my doctor had called me to give me the results of my biopsy. And at that moment, there's not much you can do. She had arranged for a meeting with breast surgeon, which would be in a couple of days, and you have to wait, and that's a horrible thing. It's a really horrible thing. So I had to go back, cut the interview with the president, and then I went home and cried.
And the 4 years that have occurred since then have been quite an odyssey for you, culminating with this book. But you you have an experience that I think is important for you to share. Obviously, you think the same. You have written a book about it. What's been the biggest revelation?
I think that there is sort of a breast cancer culture that is out there that is very rosy and bright and positive, and those are all important traits, but that is not the whole picture. And you go through some terrible things when you're going through breast cancer, and I think it's okay to actually acknowledge them and call it for what it is.
Madalika Sika's A Breast Cancer Alphabet, writes Andrea Mitchell, is brilliantly researched, smart, personal, and unvarnished primer of what every woman wants or needs to know about the diagnosis, treatment, and consequences of living with breast cancer. Her practical advice from A to Z is exactly what I wish I had known when I was first diagnosed. And it is an A to Z book, and it is something that has humor and reality. And I think that you've done quite a job in displaying or detailing what exactly happens when somebody has this diagnosis and then has to go through the process of getting well. What was the biggest hurdle for you?
I think the biggest hurdle for me was my personality, which is very much, you know, okay, let's do it and do it now. And you have to be very careful and methodical about your treatment and everything doesn't get decided at the first meeting. And, you know, we live in an age and a culture now where we want and get most things on demand. But, you know, you're not your doctor's only patient, and a lot of the tests they have to do to figure out what the appropriate treatment is takes a while. So I had to kind of learn to deal with my anxiety during that period.
I want to go over a few letters of the alphabet with you. H is for hair. What happens to your hair?
Well, most chemotherapies for breast cancer will result in hair loss. That's pretty traumatic. You know, we women especially have worried about our hair since we were very small, and to lose it is a big deal. And I think it's okay to say it's a big deal. What I did was I actually shaved my head before the hair fell out. And that was a big decision, but it was actually the only thing I really had control over. And I didn't want to be sort of, you know, picking off clumps of my hair during the treatment. I wanted it all to be gone right away. And in some ways that was actually quite liberating. And I discovered the shape of my head.
M is for mastectomy.
Yeah. I think that it is funny how we use the word very casually. It's sort of, it's a medical term, but we use it, you know, in polite company and talk about it a lot. And I think that it glosses over what is happening to your body. And I felt it was like an amputation. You know, when they remove a breast, something is gone. To me, it felt like an amputation, and I felt that I was better able to handle it thinking about it that way.
And then R is for reconstruction.
Yes. You know, many women will have reconstruction after a mastectomy, and the plastic surgeons do quite an amazing job. You know, this is something that wasn't available so easily before. And they try and sort of make you whole again. You're not going to be exactly the way you were before, but they do quite a remarkable job. And it's not vanity to want to have reconstruction.
And this book goes places that other books of this kind have not. S is for sex.
Well, I thought it was fair to raise the point that when you go through the kind of treatment that you do, it is a holistic experience, and it affects every single part of your body and your life. And again, I think it's something that we really don't talk about when we talk about breast cancer. I think it's a discussion that happens with prostate cancer. But any kind of chemotherapy, I think, there's a real number on your body, and that affects every aspect of your life. So I thought it was worth raising.
You note that once you're diagnosed with breast cancer, you suddenly realize that you could get really interested in statistics, like, as my friend, your friend Linda calls it, medical math. You suddenly become aware of probabilities and possibilities.
Absolutely. And I think that that is one sort of myth about cancer that I'd like to dispel. People sort of think, oh, great, you're done. You know, you had treatment. Well, no, it's actually all about odds. They are trying to reduce the recurrence of your cancer, and those statistics change for a variety of different reasons. And for someone like me who was diagnosed in my 40s, the 5-year survival is pretty good. It's about 90%+, but the 15-year survival drops to like 70, in the low 70s. So when you're in your 40s, you focus on things like that. You have to weigh up a lot of decisions, and you have to do the math, because there's no certain answer. I think that's the other thing that we feel, that medicine and science should provide us a definitive yes and no, and sadly it doesn't.
We're visiting with Madalika Sika. She is the NPR News Executive News Editor. How did it affect your job?
Well, as you know, Jim, broadcasting is a team sport. I, at that time, was the executive producer of Morning Edition. I had a fabulous team. I came in and out of work. Even when I was at home, I was able to stay connected. And for me, it was really important to do that. And that may not work for everybody. So I could stay connected, but I couldn't, you know, sit in the office for 12 hours. And there were some days where I was completely off the radar, as happens during the cycles of chemotherapy. But of course, I couldn't have done what I did without an amazing support. supportive staff that helped me through it.
Did it make you, Madalika, a better journalist?
I don't know that it made me a better journalist. I think it, you know, you ask a lot of questions. That's what we do for a living. And when you are going through a disease and you are having this really traumatic treatment, it's a really important tool to keep asking questions. And I think as patients, we don't feel that we're entitled to do that, that the doctor is driving the train. And that's true, but you need to be an advocate for yourself. So I was the one who asked lots of questions.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. Madalika Sika, the book is A Breast Cancer Alphabet. We'll be back tomorrow with Jay Darden. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.